This is a replay of the Thursday night, July 13th, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 3 hours to spend together, and I can say a lot on my mind. I'll bet there's stuff on yours as well. And we'll get into, once again, some help, this time not for Stacy, but hopefully all is going well with Stacy. And I know that Sherry in Naperville wants to call with some suggestions, but I got another conundrum from one of you. Actually, it was an email I got, and usually I just say, call a show, but I think she wanted to remain anonymous. So we'll discuss that in moments. But for a couple nights, I've been meaning to talk about Joe Meek. And earlier I looked and I got two emails from people saying, are you ever going to tell me about Joe Meek? I guess. And if you don't know who this is, his name is actually Robert George Meek. I don't know where Joe came from. But Joe Meek, I always say, is the UK's answer to Phil Spector. And actually, the two had an interaction at one point. But to say that he was absolutely insane is probably an understatement. But many people found him to be a genius as well. Now, why it came up this week is because he is probably best known for Telstar, which was his all the way around, though he never got a dime in royalties during his life. So first, I can't believe there's anybody who doesn't remember Telstar, but just in case, yes, and it was 60 years ago Monday, July 10th, that Telstar, the communication satellite, was launched. And so it was that Joe Meek had a dream, actually, of the melody of this song. Oh, that'll come into our story. But he put it out, and of course, it was a hit. So that's Telstar. You might remember it. It went wrong when it was a big hit, and all of a sudden he sued. And it's one of those things where copyright infringement, he stole my song. And in this case, the song that supposedly was stolen was actually from a French movie theme. And I'm trying to pull that up here. Yeah, La Marche des Austerlitz. Yeah. And, well, vaguely... Yeah. And there were many people debating how close that was, actually. There's only so many notes and only so much you can do. But the problem is, for Joe, is that it was in court. And it was in court until 3 weeks after he died in February of 1967. And at that point, all the royalties were his. He won. Except he wasn't alive to collect any of them. And one of the things that swayed the court on that, actually, was that the La Marche de Austerlitz was not released in the UK before 2 years after Telstar. And there was no way to think that he heard it or was subliminally influenced. The line just wasn't there. But in any event, he wasn't around to see it. But so it is. You know, he was producing records at a time when most producers were interested in clarity of sound. You know, trying to maintain fidelity and all that. Meanwhile, Meek's at home, literally at home, on three floors with his home studio, and he was never opposed to distorting or manipulating the sound. As you could hear in Telstar, obviously, though, that's a stretch to say that sounded like a satellite, but who knew at the time? But he absolutely was innovative. There was no doubt about it. In some ways, he was the opposite of Phil Spector in that rather than the wall of sound, he was into physically separating instruments, treating each individually with echo and reverb, and processing through, again, his own homegrown electronic devices and stuff of that nature. And it wasn't just Telstar. I mean, there's a list of dozens of people that he produced, including, by the way, in 1966, The Cryin' James. Yeah, so most of them, however, were British acts, to say, including Petula Clark and others. So he was a big deal, and you'd say, all right, so what's happening? Well, he went nuts. And boy, should I cut to the chase and tell you that basically he killed himself on February 3rd, 1967, right after he killed his landlady? Yeah. In reality, it started when he became fascinated with communicating with the dead. And so this was, you know, later on Art Bell and stuff like that, they would have that EVP, the electronic voice and all that. Well, he was a forerunner of that. He was setting up tape machines in graveyards. He was attempting to record voices from beyond the grave. And in one instance, what he got was a cat. He didn't think so. He said, no, that's human. And and he was able to translate it to his satisfaction. He also had an obsession with Buddy Holly. And he, when I say obsession, he believed Buddy was communicating with him in his dreams. And needless to say, between the poltergeist and everything else, it was a downward trajectory. Later, he was diagnosed with bipolar and schizophrenia. And to give you an idea, yes, he and Phil Spector had a conversation. Phil Spector called him. And, you know, Phil was not a bastion of mental health, to say the least. And before Phil could even explain why he was calling, Meek just launched into, "You're stealing my ideas," and on and on. Eventually just hung up angrily. But his paranoia was legendary. He was convinced that Decca Records was putting hidden microphones behind his wallpaper to steal his ideas. The dreams were important because actually it was the melody for Telstar he dreamed. So I guess some of it comes to fruition. But sadly, the problem is that he was tormented. And not only by his mental health issues, but also culturally, at the time, being gay was not something that was widely accepted, and he was, but he was absolutely manic that nobody know, which of course made him the perfect target to be, in fact, blackmailed or what have you. In 1963, it was somewhat known, although he was not a real well-known figure at the time. He was convicted for what do they call it? Importuning for immoral purposes, I think, in a London men's room. And that's when the blackmail started, but not in earnest. Later it was that way. But he was 100% afraid of being outed. And so much like later Michael Jackson wearing the masks and the sunglasses and all that, yeah, he was, Meek was always in disguise, afraid that somebody would recognize him. He had people, the Cray twins, he feared, would attempt to steal his act and blackmail him, you know, all that. And so Needless to say, without any royalties from Telstar, and as the lawsuit was taking more time and money, he was going deeper and deeper. And so it was February 3rd, 1967, that his landlady was Violet Shinton. He killed her with a single-barreled shotgun that he had confiscated from one of the tornadoes, actually, somebody who had been a protege. And it was a deal where he and the landlady were arguing over noise levels. Well, let's face it, we've all been there when we've been upset that somebody's upset that our stereo was too loud or what have you. Well, he took it to the next level and he shot her. And he had the gun under his bed and all that. And so bottom line was that before he could be questioned, of course, he killed himself. And so that was the deal. But as I say, he was really one of the first to grasp a lot of the modern techniques. And there were several people who said, well, if you can see beyond the craziness, much like a Phil Spector, you really got something there. All right, so that was the deal deal with that. So now I promised I would mention Joe Meek, and I did. And I'll go over the latest conundrum that you can help a listener with, and because I did the best I can, but you'll have better advice. But before we do, we've got Paul in Iroquois who's going to kick it off tonight. Paul, welcome to WGN Radio. Hello, Paul. I can hear you back there.
Hello, Raleigh.
Yes, yes.
To me.
Yeah, I am talking to you. I'm not going to ask what you're doing. I'm almost afraid.
I stepped outside for a minute.
Uh-huh.
I have a question which has to do with something called soundboards. No idea what that is.
Well,
give me the
context, because that's
okay. Well, evidently some of Elvis Presley's music has been put on soundboards.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So you can go online and take a look. In fact, if you go to 101soundboards.com, you can take a look at that. But soundboard.com as well. You can go to Elvis Presley shop. There's a number of these things, so you can listen to them.
So are they exactly the same as what you'd get on a CD of the same concert?
No. No, and you know, I have not listened to them, but I can almost guarantee you no. I will. Hopefully, somebody who is really into this will be able to tell us. You know, as I said, tell me the context, because you know, a soundboard is often just a thin wooden plate that's an amplifier, and we know that's not what we're talking about here. So, hopefully somebody will tell us. But normally, in the electronic sense, it'll make the sound of a speaker louder and more clear because of the reflection of the sound. In other words, it's a resonant plate. But I do not believe that's what they're talking about at all at all these various sites.
So my second question is, you mentioned somebody, Don Sorkin,
Dan Sorkin.
Dan Sorkin?
Yes.
And that he was your mentor?
No, I didn't know, man. I was just a fan. No. I was just a fan. Dan was on WCFL doing Morning Drive from about 58 to about 63.
WCSL.
CFL, Chicago Federation of Labor, AM 1000, WCFL.
Chicago Federation of Labor.
Yeah, and Dan Sorkin was hilarious. And he was probably best known for the Save Rose Bimler campaign. Dan noticed that people were all about, you know, protesting, but for the most part, people were in marches. They had no idea what they were marching about. And so he came up with this campaign to save Rose Bimler. Now, if anybody were to ask, nobody really did. Rose was drowning in obscurity in Cicero. But the Save Rose Bimler campaign took off, and even one of the Chicago public stations did a whole feature on this. Of course, there was no Rose Bimler, but you know, you'd have to go back and hear this to understand why it's hilarious. I still have my Rose Bimler button. But the other thing that, well, so many things, but one of the things that Dan did that I thought was truly wonderful was he literally single-handedly put Nielsen radio ratings out of the radio rating business. What had happened...
Which was a good thing, I imagine.
Well, I thought it was. What had happened is... It was probably 1961, could have been 62. I'm not as good with years then, but 61 or 62. At the time, the rating services were Trendix and Hooper, and a company called Pulse had come in, and Nielsen Radio Ratings. Now, the deal was that Sorkin was undeniably popular. I mean, so was obviously a Wally Phillips, but he was up there. And the ratings came out, and... By the way, Nielsen was headquartered in Chicago, and Sorkin wasn't in them. He didn't make the ratings, all right? Now, this is statistically impossible at this point in time. So what Sorkin did, first he got on the air and explained, you know, that in this, I should, as a backdrop, mention also that we're talking about a time when people are afraid they're going to be reduced to a number. They're taking away telephone exchange names and putting them in with numbers. You're paying a bill and you're getting a punch card to mail back. You know, that was sort of going on at the time. And so Sorkin says, you know, at a time when you're being reduced to a number, and now this company called Nielsen, which has my fate in its hand, says you're not a number, says you don't exist. You don't even exist. And so he goes on about this for a couple days, and then he says, why don't you call the Nielsen company and let them know you exist? Or at least ask them to explain what's going on, because clearly they think you don't exist. And maybe I'm just talking to imaginary listeners. He does this whole bit. Well, anyway, the phone lines are flooded. Some idiot at Nielsen makes the mistake of calling him. Not a good idea. So it escalates. Then he starts the letter writing campaign. Well, eventually he has people march on Nielsen in Chicago. I mean, it was covered by the news stations, for God's sakes. And of course, there was no doubt that Nielsen goofed and Sorkin had a lot of listeners. But he just had a field day with that. And the liners and stuff were truly hilarious, and I wish that I had tapes, and I don't. You know, this is pre-cassette, this is the reel-to-reel day, and I just don't. And I don't know of any that are out there, but, you know, he would come up with things like write-in contest, postcard contests. On a postcard, write in 10 words or less, why I want 7 beautiful girls and a chauffeur-driven Rolls Royce for the evening. You know, things like that. Well, of course, you know, nobody could, and most people didn't. And his accountant, actually, was Bob Newhart. He discovered Bob Newhart. So Sorkin was just the best, but he was crazy. And when I say crazy, he was not quite as bad as Joe Meek, don't get me wrong, but he was up there in the annals of crazy, unfortunately. And he went out to California. He was a part-timer on KSFO. And sadly, he was in a motorcycle accident. He lost a leg, but that didn't stop him. But he got involved, because there were no substances that he didn't like. He got involved with Synanon, you know, the people who put snakes in mailboxes. And so there was a big hoo-ha in San Francisco when he and some other people held journalists at gunpoint. I'm not making this up. And so he, you know, was in the news for that. But bottom line is, he only died in the last few years. He lived into his 90s, and he was just as irreverent as ever. In fact, he started a support group for amputees, Stumps Are Us, and, you know, because he said, these people have no sense of humor, and he was just...
So what years was he famous for?
58, 63, about. And then later in the Bay Area, you know, sporadically through the 60s. He was going to be the morning man at KHJ in Los Angeles. In fact, he had already signed the deal, and as he was getting ready to move to L.A., RKO changed the format to Top 40 in 1965, Boss Radio, and so they rescinded the contract. But, you know, he was
a KSFO. My last question is, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Interrupt me.
Is there a book that you could recommend that lays out what it's like to be a disc jockey?
I don't know.
I know you rode one at one time.
Yeah, but that was not about what it's like to be a disc jockey from that standpoint. But there's a number of books that are interesting, but no, I wouldn't say that anybody is what it's like to be a disc jockey. But there have been, going back as far as 1970 was when Arnold Passman wrote The Disc Jockeys, which was more about the MOR guys. But a lot of books out there, but I can't say I recommend any one book.
And my last question is FTD Label, which handles Elvis Presley's alternate takes and all that kind of stuff. And there's like sound chatter, you know, him talking to the musicians and so forth. Is that something that other artists have done?
I don't know if anybody's put it out, you know, who would care, but very often on CDs, you will absolutely get some of that FTD, of course, for Follow That Dream. You will get some of that back and forth on a number of CD tracks just because they put it in there, but I don't think there's anybody that, other than Follow That Dream, that's specializing in putting out control room chatter.
Right, and they're very expensive.
Well, just wait. You know, it'll come up used. Keep checking eBay.
The last question is the SCA radio. What do they talk about on SCA and
on subcarriers?
How do you find?
Hang on a minute. It's, don't go away. John said you're blowing the news again as usual. All right, so because that's not a one word answer, but plenty of words in the news coming up right here on WGN Radio.
Help. Hey, I can't do it alone. No, I need help. Hey, I can't do it alone. No, how can I feel it when I'm doing it wrong? Hey, I need to feel it. I need to feel it. I need to feel it.
I'm Raleigh James. Well, Johnny D wanted I Need Help by James Brown. I thought, let's play the original. Yeah, I Need Help, 1970. And that was Bobby Bird. And Bobby Bird was actually one of the founders of the famous Flames. Not only that, it was Bird who took James Brown into the band originally. And, of course, they made history with hits together. Bobby wrote that with James Brown's son, Terry. And so that's the deal. Now, James Brown later did it in some live appearances, and I think it's on some of his CDs and all that kind of stuff. But and Bobby Bird, by the way, had a number of records out even before the famous Flames and stuff like that. But on King in 1970, he came up with I Need Help, I Can't Do It Alone. And Johnny D suggested it because of Stacy. Now, we're talking to Paul. We're about to get into SCAs. Happy to do that, Paul. But don't go away. Hang on, because Steve Bryan says, I know exactly what soundboards are right now. Well, like I say, I know what they are electronically, but I know that's not the deal. So, Steve, thank you for calling. What's the deal?
Hi, Raleigh. Thank you for taking the call. I heard you talking about soundboards. Now, I think they're used extensively in morning drive radio. Is that what we're...
Absolutely. I understand that. But no, apparently this is websites, and I'll have to look them up, that have a ton of music in there, and they're being marketed as soundboards.
It's on a touch screen, and if it were with Elvis songs, each song might have a little box on the screen. It might be like an old jukebox where they could page through all these things, and then if they want to hear the song, they touch the screen the little box that the song
is on. All right, like 360 systems. So like you say, Morning Men and all that kind of stuff. All right.
Yeah.
All right, so that's interesting. So there you have it. And I guess you can get that as hardware if you want, software, I guess.
Well, that's true. I think most stations get it as software, and they have the wacky sound effects and all that.
Oh yeah, but apparently they're selling it to the general public.
Oh yeah, it's another way of selling music. And I'm at 72. I'm old enough to remember all the incredible ways they've tried to sell music over the years.
Oh God,
do you remember play tapes?
Oh, of course.
How weird was that?
Well, I mean, the worst were the plastic Dyna-Groove type things they'd send you to play as actual material. So yes, absolutely.
These little play tapes, and I think Lafayette Electronics had a piece of it because they were really, their catalogs were really pushing the players, which looked a little bit like the shoebox cassette players, but the music was on these little discs. Almost looks like those things that they used on Star Trek. That was their computer tapes that they'd plug in from time to time. Little squares, maybe two inch squares. So they and they had some of the big rock bands on them. And I think it lasted maybe 6 months.
The guy who developed this was actually Frank Stanton.
Oh.
If you're ready for that, and
the cartridge guy, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And it was a two-track system. It was competing. Remember, 8 tracks weren't out, but 4 tracks were
right.
Big then, and so
yep.
They were typical cartridges from 8 to 24 minutes, and they were continuous. And so, what made them interesting to the public, of course, was they were portable.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
but for a professional use, to me they sort of look like McKenzie's.
Oh, they're horrible.
Yeah,
they were about I was so fascinated that I had to buy one, and I think I bought a Who tape and a Rolling Stones tape and a few other things, and it's like you kept saying, oh well, there'll be more and more tapes coming out. Well, no, there won't. The company went down.
Well, right later, Smith yeah. Corona used them. Believe it or not, and that was a very bizarre thing for voice letters with inexpensive shipping costs.
Oh my gosh!
Oh, it was just
yes.
So high pack, I think. The play tape cartridge. Oh my God! Yes,
that was just takes you back. Now, do you have a moment, or are you moving on?
Well, no, I'm going to get back to Paul and his SCA question. But what's up?
Oh, I meant to call you a couple of weeks ago on the right around the anniversary time of the Monterey Pop Festival. I was there all 3 days.
All right.
I know. Well, no, there was some very cool, look, Otis Redding owned the crowd.
Yeah, it was 1967. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was 16. I was
right.
16.
Well, you also had things like Ravi Shankar. I mean, please.
But who played? Well, here's the funny thing. They showed the Monterey Pop movie the other night on Turner Classics,
mm-hmm.
and they've obviously had to edit the movie for copyright reasons, because there were a lot better performers in the original movie that I saw back in the 70s
mm-hmm.
than what I saw here. They had almost like a half hour of Ravi Shankar.
Yeah.
A man who mm-hmm. I always thought when he got done was going to stand up, take his bow and say, thank you very much. Someday I'll learn how to play a real song.
Okay.
For crying out loud.
Yeah. Well, they underpaid him. I think Country Joe and the Fish got twice as much money.
Oh, my God. Well, Shankar played for, and this they took this out of the movie, too, but in the original movie, he played like for a half hour. And everybody, he stopped. Everybody applauded, and he said, thank you very much. If you like the tuning so much, I hope you will like the performance.
Oh, God. No, God. Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, here's the deal. He then played, and I'm not exaggerating. This burned into my 16-year-old memory. He played for 4 hours.
No.
4 hours.
No.
Or it's just, see, I made more trips to this food court area.
No.
Well, and it was a little embarrassing because we were only like three or four rows back for the stage. And the food court did a bustling business during his performance.
Oh man, yeah. Well, that was obviously a big deal. And what was odd is Top 40 Radio promoted it. In fact, that horrible Scott McKenzie record, San Francisco, oh, be sure to wear flowers. And oh God, I remember that. I remember they sent a little hat with flowers as the promo. I still remember this thing. And they released that like a month and a half early to promote the event. And I had no idea why Top 40 felt the need to play this, but they did. And of course, you know, here's the association. I think they were the first act that performed there, you know, and Lou Rawls, I think, was the second, right? And Johnny Rivers. Now, so far, not bad, you know, in terms of the lineup. And you get Eric Burdon with some incarnation of the Animals, I don't know what. And, you know, Simon and Garfunkel, okay. But okay. then you start to get in the next, like, to the Canned Heat and the Big Brother and Country Joe and the Fish.
But there was a band called the Electric Flag.
Of course, yes, and absolutely.
Michael Bloomfield was their guitarist. I have just a quick thing to
Buddy Miles, Barry Goldberg, they were all in the Electric Flag. And
phenomenal group. And all the musical instrument companies had booths there.
Yeah.
Fender had one, Guild had one, Gibson had one. I was at the Fender booth.
Oh,
it's
no.
A memory of makes me smile every time I think of it. I'm in the Fender booth. I'm looking around. I'm a 16-year-old kid with black horn-rimmed glasses, short hair, just looking around, and I see Michael Bloomfield.
Oh yeah.
And he's looking around, and I got the courage. I went up. I said, you know, Mr. Bloomfield, I said, I love your music. I said, quack quack quack, making a blithering idiot out of myself. And he was so nice, Raleigh. He said, oh, that's so cool, man. Thank you. He said, are you going to play some of these guitars? I said, well, I'm not going to buy them. He said, oh, come on. He took me over, introduced me to the guy at the booth. He said, hey, you know, Maddie, this is my friend Steve. He wants to play some guitars. So the Fender guy set me up, and I played guitars, and it was all from the kindness of Michael Bloomfield.
Oh,
and
that's nice.
Just touched my heart.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that album, and Michael Bloomfield was born in Chicago, so there's a connection.
Yes.
Sadly.
Played with Muddy Waters, and sadly found him dead in his car. With he was a heavy drug user, but there were no drugs in his system, supposedly, when they found him dead. I guess the drugs had already done their damage.
I don't know. That was 1981, I know. You know, and of course, Super Session later, Bloomfield and Stills and Cooper.
Stills and all those people, yeah.
It was interesting. Tom Rounds was still at KFRC then, and that's when he got together with Mike Driscoll, the fruit shipper, underwrote it, and they did the Miami Pop Festival in 69.
Oh.
Yeah, and that was the precursor, of course, to Woodstock, which I guess it was 68, December 68. In any event, John's looking at me and saying, you got a break, don't I?
No. Anyway, it was great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
All right, yes, call me again soon, and thanks for that information. Don't go away.
My pleasure.
Okay, bye. All right, so don't go away, Paul. We'll be back to it, and we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio. You know, I just realized we've only got 2 minutes left this hour, and so I'll play Steeler's Wheel, which was Linda's request, next hour. But Paul in Iroquois County, back to you. All right, so Paul, are you still with us? I think we lost Paul. Which is a real shame. We could have talked about SCAs. But in the meantime, so that's what soundboards are. And I've got the 360 system stuff and the shortcuts and all that. And no, I don't use them. All right, so we have 2 more hours to talk. And I'll give you the conundrum that I got from an email earlier today and see if you've got any advice. And whatever is on your mind for the next 2 hours as we continue right there. Sorry we didn't have the SCA discussion. Always fascinating, all right? Or not. 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. And hopefully Nick from Baltimore will call back. We unfortunately ran out of time last night, and looking forward to that. And I also ran ran out of time before I played John from Covington's Johnny Rivers request, but I will absolutely do that as well. New moon. Yeah, I always get a request for when's the new moon, so you can do your prosperity checks. And that is Monday, July 17th, 1:32 Central. You can go to MarianneWinkowski.com to find out about the law of abundance. And it's amazing that it, you know, it absolutely does work. So 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh. And see, I should have played Steeler's Wheel, stuck in the middle with you. But that's right. But we've got several other things to discuss, no doubt, for the next couple hours. And this week, Peter Brown turned 70. Yeah, Tuesday. I was going to talk about that on Tuesday's show, except we didn't have a Tuesday show. Thank you, Cox. However, Peter Brown was just, I thought he was a genius. He was a kid in Blue Island, Illinois, who, man, came up with some albums, even did the artwork himself. It was so realistic, and did the whole things on iMac. And these were hits. Yeah, so maybe, even though we're going to play him Tuesday, maybe we'll play some Peter Brown tonight and hopefully talk to you coming up on WGN Radio.
To hold you, and you know I've always told you that we must never, ever part. Oh, have I the right to kiss you? And you know I'll always miss you. I've loved you from the very start. Come right back, I just can't bear it. I got your love and I love to share it. Come right back, I'll show my love is strong. Oh yeah. Have I the right to touch you? If I could, you'd see how much you send those shivers running down my spine. Ooh, have I the right to thrill you? You know I'm waiting till you give me the right to make you mine. Well, come right back, I just can't bear it. I've got some love and I long to share it. Come right back, I'll show my love is strong. Oh yeah.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that's the Honeycombs from 1964. The hit here stateside, big hit in the UK, and that's Joe Meek at his finest. And in fact, Joe G emailed and said, don't forget the Honeycombs. No, it's one of absolutely one of Joe Meek's biggest things. So couldn't forget the Honeycombs. So there you have that. 888-876-5593. All right, Paul in Iroquois County is back. All right, so we've determined soundboards in this gizmo basically allow you to play audio clips. So when you asked if they would be good quality, well, the problem is they won't be the full record. They'll be clips, maybe seconds.
Okay, so back to the subcarrier radio.
Yeah, SCAs. Yeah, the joy of FM. And this is, at this point, pretty much unregulated. What do you want to know about them?
What is it that I'm likely to hear, and how do I find out what subcarrier station is playing in my area?
You're not likely to hear anything because most of its subscription is not going to be available to you necessarily. Firstly,
say no more.
Back in the day, it was most commonly used for music. Now that's on satellite, but originally it was. The deal is there are 101 FM channels between 87.9 and 107.9, and they are licensed in 200 kilohertz increments. That's why there's like a 102.1357. You're not going to, in this country, have 102.2468. You see what I'm saying? All right. So with that in mind, you've got 200 kilohertz increments, and it's possible to transmit up to 100 kilohertz in audio, and this is wider than the range of human hearing, so nobody does. In fact, most FM is probably 15 kilohertz. And so that leaves you, as a licensed station, with a lot of spectrum for other uses. All right. So this is where the subcarrier comes in, where it may be information. It may not be audio, but it could be books on tape, whatever. You know, it could be a variety of things. But Muzak was the big one. Reading services, foreign language services, data transmission, all of that. And pretty much you can hear it on FM, but you're not going to hear much for the most part.
Okay.
So,
And if I can, I have a request.
Yes.
And that is, would you play part of a clip of Lonnie Johnson's Tomorrow Night and part of a clip of Elvis Presley's Tomorrow Night?
Well, I'll do it, but why?
To see the difference in what appealed to him about Lonnie Johnson's version.
Okay. I'll be happy to do that. That's easy.
Great.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Pleasure talking to you.
Likewise. All right, so, and when I say you can hear SCA transmission, there's little things that you've got to do to demodulate, but, you know, if it's your goal, it's possible, but no, for the most part, not something you want to listen to. All right, so 888-876-5593. So I get this email. And it's from somebody who listens to the show, but again, didn't want to call in an outer self. And middle-aged female, problems with parents. I know, say the word, right? I'm sure that's universal to some degree. And of course, anybody whose parents are no longer on the planet is saying, gee, I wish I had the problem. But regardless, it can be serious. So some of it was common sense, and I didn't need to solicit your advice. For instance, and what it is, it's a toxic situation where this person has parents who can no longer control her by telling her she has to go to her room like when she was six. And so now they're controlling in other ways. They're giving her things, they're taking it back. First thing I said there is that's easy. You know, if you are beholden to them financially for whatever reason, you're never going to get out from under. So first thing is, if you're independent, be independent. Don't take the gifts, especially if it's something they can take it back. So that's easy. But now comes the part. She says, you know, they're getting older, they're not going to be around, and I feel guilty. I feel guilty because I don't want to completely not talk to them. And what if they? I said, guilt. So now we get into it. I have a litmus test for guilt myself, and that is, if a situation arises where somebody is trying to make you feel guilty for someone, for something that you're not doing or something that you are doing, either way, take yourself and them out of the equation. Look at it in a neutral light. If this was somebody else and you were advising them, is it something you feel that they are obligated to do or not do? And if the answer to that is yes, then go do it. If the answer to that is no, then there's no guilt they can possibly put on you because you don't feel it's correct. So when you've got a situation of aging parents but who are in a toxic relationship, the only advice I could give her is, I said, the first thing is, you need boundaries, and you need to know exactly what they are. And you need to transmit in a non-emotional fashion that if they want to talk to you, if they want to be involved with you, that they cannot cross your boundaries. And if they try to cross their boundaries, you just say, gee, I'm sorry you feel that way, and excuse yourself. But I understand the deal of saying, yeah, but if anything happens to them, I'm going to feel so guilty. And I just find that very misplaced. Again, I think that, you know, if you set yourself up, that you set some boundaries, and you in fact, you know, explain exactly what the deal is, that you're not going to be abused and all this, if they continue to do that, then I don't think you have any guilt for removing yourself from the situation. But I thought to myself, there's probably a better answer than that, and I don't know what it is. So that's her issue. But I've never been swayed by guilt on anything, because I really do live up to that. The things that I feel I'm responsible to do, well, even when I don't like them, I go do them because I think, you know, I'm responsible for this for whatever reason. But if it's something that somebody's asking me to do that I think is just outside the norm and I shouldn't have to do that, nothing that they do can make me feel guilty that I didn't. And if it's somebody who is, for whatever reason, mistreating me and I remove myself from the equation, I don't feel guilty that I'm not there. You know, that's, I think if it's a parent or something like that, it would be a situation where you say, Mom, Dad, the door is always open. I'd love to see you, but not if you're going to abuse me. So the choice is yours. Put it on them, and then you're done. But maybe it's not that simple. So John is screening your calls right now. Yes, I know. And he comes in here and says, you'll feel guilty if you don't talk about C-grain. Well, he's right. I would feel guilty about that because I should and I want to. And I will. So there. And let's talk about the CC Pocket right now because it's a truly fine addition to your radio arsenal. The CC Pocket radio is really popular for a lot of reasons. It's got unbeatable AM and FM reception. And, you know, that's the deal with Bob Crane. Every radio that he makes available has killer reception. And this goes way back, you know, a couple decades to when radios just all had terrible reception, and most still do. Well, Bob said we can do better than that. And he gives you the kind of reception you remember from back in the day. Just terrific, terrific AM and FM. But not only that, features. And all of his radios have some neat features as well. And the CC Pocket, like I say, it's really small. You can hold it in your hand. You can put it in your purse or in your pocket, what have you. But digital readout with a digital light, dial light, 5 memory preset buttons so you can select your favorite. And it's an emergency radio as well because it has the NOAA weather band and the emergency alert. So you carry this and you'll always know when it's going to be an issue. It's very light. It's very durable. And with me, that's a big deal because I drop them with alarming regularity. It's very easy to hold with rubber sides and a pocket clip. It's ready to go anywhere. Now, if you go to ccradio.com, you can read all about it. ccradio.com. And at that point, you can not only get great information on the CC radio, but radio in general. So it's a wonderful site. If you need it immediately, well, sure, you can call Amazon or REI or go to Amazon or REI or Bi-Mart. But best deal if you're online is ccradio.com. Read all about it. Now, if you're not online at all and you still want to order, they have terrific customer service. 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-TUNE. CCRadio.com. You look at the CC Pocket Radio, you tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
I hear you leave me, baby. Say you won't be back. That would be the end of me. God, I'd have a heart attack, you better get some Injuns on me, baby. Take out some Injuns on me, baby. Cause if you ever, ever say goodbye, I'm gonna fall right off and die. You better get some insurance on me, baby. Take out some insurance on me, baby. Cause if you ever, ever say goodbye, I'm gonna hold right off and die. Don't get sick, an accident, cause I'm
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yeah, Jimmy Reed, 1959 on VJ. Take out some insurance. Yeah, because we're going to talk to Gino about insurance coming up. But Paul in Iroquois County has called back. All right, so we'll talk about those over-exciting SCAs or something. So, all right. Well, actually, no. I think we actually talked to Paul. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, well, we'll talk to Mark in Aurora. I know he's there. So, all right, Mark.
Yeah, good evening. I would certainly say that guilt is a manipulative tool used by dysfunctional parents to violate the boundaries of their grown children. And I would also say that there is a lot of misunderstanding, perhaps especially among ultra-conservative Christians, about the meaning of honor thy father and thy mother. It does not mean obey in adulthood. when the Apostle Paul says, children, obey your parents, by children, he means little ones. He doesn't mean full-grown adults.
Let's get religion out of it, period, for that.
Well,
get politics out of it, too. We know all that. I don't need a discourse.
What I'm asking you
is not an explanation. We understand the paradigm. I've set that forth. In that situation, when you are feeling guilty, and you know, you heard what I had to say, what advice do you have for that individual? Don't give me the history of guilt and parenting.
Well, this is my point. The guilt tends to be invalidated, at least, if not at first eliminated, if you realize that honor thy father and thy mother only means be there for them. It doesn't mean obey them on every
point. Not. No, I got
and
that.
There is a place for grown adult children to say openly to their parents, hey, you know,
I don't think it's valid
for me to obey this, but I'll tell you why it's not valid. And you're just going to have to accept this because I'm a grown adult now and
you can't
boss me around.
I understand that. That's a given. Now, when the parents come back and say, well, then get out of here, how do you not feel guilty as they say die?
It is not easy to not feel guilty.
Well, that's the only question I'm asking tonight, and it is an emotional one. I'm not asking for the rational answer. When you have somebody trying to put guilt on you, and it's somebody close to you, it doesn't have to be a parent. In this case, it is. How do you? And so my only way is to again look at it rationally and ask yourself: is this something a reasonable person would expect to be done? And if it is, do it. But if it's not, then don't take the guilt. But saying don't take the guilt is easy, and doing it is hard. So that's my only question. Not anything else you've said. But so here,
I think it's a gradual process of rewiring the brain.
Okay.
If you tell yourself enough times, I'm not going to obey, and there are good reasons I'm not going to obey, I'm not going to feel guilty, you'll have to tell yourself that over and over again. But the process of telling yourself that over and over again will begin to carve new neural pathways into your brain. The guilt will slowly fade.
Okay, rather than say...
Slowly fade.
Right, rather than say I'm not going to obey, I think better would be, I believe it's inappropriate for me to obey. You know, in other words, stress the idea that what's being asked of you is unreasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds reasonable. The I'm not going to is a flat refusal.
Well, I know, but that doesn't.
You may want to back it up with good reasons.
But the
point is to rewire your brain
so that
the guilt slowly goes away.
All right, good deal. Thanks for the call.
And
I appreciate it.
It won't take overnight. It'll take maybe a year or more.
Well, and if you don't have a year or more, you've got to get to a place in your mind to know that what you are doing is appropriate, what you are asking is not appropriate. Living with the kind of guilt is the issue. And as people have a toxic association as they get older, that's exactly what they fear. Well, what if they die tomorrow? Well, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. Good deal.
Well, the only thing I can say to that is that the brain doesn't get rewired overnight.
No, of course not.
That's just the way it is.
Of course not. All right. Thanks for calling.
I wish this person a lot of good blessings.
Yes.
Because this is going to be a struggle.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Thank you.
Okay. Good night, everybody.
Good deal. Yes, it's never easy. And again, the first step is to make sure that you've cut the financial ties. Because if somebody is trying to manipulate you through guilt, there certainly would not be about manipulating you through help. And so that part you need to take out of the equation first. But then we'll get some more advice on that, I can tell. We're going to talk to Gino about insurance and Nick about KXYZ. All right, why not? Pat is a first-time caller, though, and we defer to first-time callers. So, Pat, let's see. I've got about a minute here before the news, but we can at least introduce you and then try to entice you to hang on. So, Pat, welcome to WGN Radio.
Rowley, I finally had a call.
Oh, good.
I love your show.
Thank you.
And I find you fascinating. If it's not You don't have to answer questions. I grew up in Detroit, R&B, yeah. Motown.
Yeah.
I find your knowledge of radio and stuff. I used to work in a shop where I repaired radios.
All right. So
I find you very interesting, and I love your show and listen to it all the time.
Well, that's wonderful to have you. Yeah, Detroit, Lucky Keener 13, the Scotty Regan
show.
Well,
you know, I moved to Chicago after high school.
Okay.
Got married, had a couple of kids. I've been married for 32 years.
Right. Well,
but there's no Motown or R&B stations in Chicago.
Well, there are, but when you're talking R&B oldies, it's not only Chicago. That's sort of absent from the world. And so I know.
You know, if you have to take a break, that's fine.
Yes.
I'm curious where you grew up and how you got your knowledge and of R&B in Motown. And
okay, I'll answer that. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. We'll find out what's going on in the world at large and come back. Sure, I'll be happy to answer questions and to talk to Gino and to talk to Nick. Okay, XYZ, I can't wait. And Dennis in Colorado, you too, coming up on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is Johnny Rivers with the live and in-person version of Every Day I Have to Cry, Son, recorded at the Whiskey, and it was John in Covington who had requested that. Of course, the original hit was Steve Alamo, yeah, Miami's own. Well, Rochester's own, but he was in Miami at the time. In any event, Arthur Alexander wrote it, and it was a decade before he would record it, but John wanted the Johnny Rivers version, which was a nice live version as far as that goes, but wouldn't threaten the world. All right, so now, Pat, a first-time caller in Harwood Heights, and you asked me where I was born and why I like radio or whatever. Born in Los Angeles, grew up there in Miami. And listen to the radio from day one, as early as I can remember. My adoptive dad was Bolivian, so some time in South America, which gave me some different listening as well. But predominantly, I would say L.A. and Miami.
Did those places actually play R&B?
Oh, yeah. Well, remember. Motown, of course, is a little later for me. I'm a little predating that. But yeah, remember, WLAC out of Nashville just blanketed Miami at night, that 15:10 a.m. And let me tell you what, remember, from sundown to sunup, they were R&B. And mostly what they were doing was mail order stuff from Randy's record shop in Gallatin, Tennessee, and Ernie's Record Mart in downtown Nashville, and Stan the Man in Shreveport, Louisiana, who owned Paula and all that. And, of course, Ernie's Record Mart downtown, Ernie owned Accello. Well, there's a lot of interesting stuff on Accello. So, sure, I heard all of that. But remember, in the 50s, what you were starting to see was not so much full-time soul stations. That would come a little later. But a lot of the lower rank stations and some of the FM stations, because remember, the field effect transistor and circular polarization were not used, so FM really wasn't viable. So you were hearing, you know, either good music, things to listen to on your Macintosh tuner, or paid religion, or brokered, you know, a dollar a holler radio. It's the Hungarian hour, it's the Swedish hour, and then it's this guy who's bought some R&B time. So there were a lot, and that's really true for Chicago. There was an awful lot of day-parted programming, bought religion, you know, on WOPA, things like that, and many other stations as well. But in any event, you know, I heard it all and loved R&B. And, you know, I can't tell you exactly why, but I did. And there was always some place to listen to it. And then, of course, the Border Blasters. By the time 1960 rolled around, the idea that these stations in Mexico that had 250,000 watts at the time, they don't now, you could buy time there, well, hell. Like, everybody knows about Wolfman, and that's true, but there were a number of other shows as well. So there were all sorts of places to hear it. Then, by the time the 60s happened, well, now I'm a little older, but you had a lot of full-time soul stations. Now, the deal about soul radio is no one would go to soul radio as a format by choice, because of course the advertisers were not going to buy that time the same way they would a general market station. That was true for country as well. So usually the station that was going to go country or going to go soul was something that was a dog. It was a loser. Maybe it had a bad dial position, maybe it had bad ownership, maybe it had both. And you had a couple chains like the OK Group that did soul radio in a number of places. Of course, in Chicago, thank God for the Chess Brothers, because they, about 1963, they bought what became WVON. And, of course, then in Milwaukee, WNOV. So by the mid-60s, you had a ton of soul stations everywhere. I can't think of a market that didn't. Now, it's less likely, you know, OK, Bangor, Maine, they didn't. Even Seattle didn't have much, but most markets had one or two soul stations. Usually it was owned by an independent businessman who was down and dirty and cheap, and he went to soul because maybe he couldn't succeed at anything else. And I knew one guy who only hired prison parolees because he didn't have to pay them. And he told him, well, just go get your money from the record companies. I am not making this up. I won't mention names. So there was a lot of that going on, but you could hear it. And then, of course, back in the day, even in the 50s, in places like Philadelphia, you had guys like Jocko Henderson, who actually, Jocko was wonderful, but he was imitating Hot Rod Hulbert, who was a little earlier. But Jocko was great, and he rhymed everything. And that's when the disc jockeys rapped and the records didn't. So hearing the soul jocks was just as good as hearing the records. I just fell in love with these guys.
Wow.
So always listen to it. You know, I like some old country, too. You know, listen to a lot of that.
Oh, I like a lot of everything, too. Mm. I'm just amazed at the music history that you know.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder, how does she know all this?
Listening, like anybody else.
For a genre that maybe I'm ignorant. I was born in 64.
All right. So
the music I heard in Detroit before I moved to Chicago and got married and had kids and stayed here, I couldn't hear it anymore on a regular, you know, terrestrial radio.
Well, you could have on WVON. You know, you didn't know where to look. You didn't know where to look.
It's probably true.
But, yeah, Detroit, of course, was interesting because by the time you were born, you know, CK was coming on, and that was, at the time you were born, the number one top 40 station was still Lucky Keener 13. CK was, you know, gearing up for the takeover, and with that signal, of course, they would. And, you know, for a while, WXYZ was top 40, you know, a lot of that in Detroit. But you always had a lot of soul radio in Detroit as well. But Chicago had a ton of it. I mean, a ton of it. You just didn't know where to look.
No, probably.
Yeah, and so I think that's it more than anything else, you know. And, of course, had wonderful soul record labels, you know, the Leaner Brothers, Wonderful. What a great little label Wonderful was. And, of course, you know, Chess, Checker Cadet, all that. And VJ, oh, my God. Yeah. And believe me, all those records were played on the radio. Now, not necessarily on the station you might be listening to, but they were played.
I was kind of just getting in the middle of the FM dial. And it's like,
Well,
like nobody played Motown or R&B.
Well, you see, when you're talking FM, and if you were born in 64, you're now talking the mid-70s while you're listening, or even the 80s. Well, now...
But,
now those stations those stations are worth something. So they're usually not going to go to a format that's not mainstream. Although you had quite a bit, by the time 1990 rolls around, you had quite a bit of urban on FM. It wasn't urban oldies necessarily, except on Sunday morning or something like that. But it was there, and of course some of the non-coms. You just had to know where to look.
When you talked a few minutes ago,
yeah,
about your exposure to everything for all these different stations,
yeah,
were you talking about the high-powered AM stations that go like?
Well, some of them,
yes, the country.
Right, some of them, if I like them, I mean, WLAC certainly, that was in Nashville, and I was sitting in Miami. But, 800 was a very interesting dial position, because if I turned the radio in one direction, I got Radio Bon Air from the Lesser Antilles, and if I turned the radio in the other direction, I got CKLW from Windsor. So, that was on one frequency. And, of course, your Mexican border blasters, but everything. I would scan the dial on AM from 540 to 1600. That's all we had at the time. On FM, from Channel 6 up to 107.9. So, yeah.
My dad was an auto worker in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
And in the morning, he would listen to AM.
Sure.
In the morning, he would pick up, I think it was WGN.
Sure.
Somebody would say, "It's a beautiful morning in Chicago."
Right. Absolutely. You could pick that up easily. And yeah, sure. And I'm trying to think of his name right now. The guy, he just retired recently, who did all the ag stuff. He would have been on when your dad was listening, for sure. And maybe even Wally Phillips. But why can't I think of it? Well, it'll come to me. In any event, sure. You could listen to stations from anywhere, but it would depend, you could find it. And that was sort of my thing. I would not be necessarily interested in the stations that were the high ranking stations. I was interested in what the guys who had four listeners were doing.
Oh, me too.
Well, then it was there.
Can I say one last thing?
Yeah, sure.
I think you're a really nice person, and I really appreciate your empathy that you have with some people that call in. Just need someone to listen for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I thank you.
I think it's very cool.
I was going to say, I hope you're going to call in again. Hope this won't be the last time we hear from Pat.
No. Absolutely.
Okay, good. I will look forward to that. Thank you. Orion Samuelson, that's who I was thinking about. He would have been around doing the ag reports when your dad was listening.
Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong. And
there you are. See, you remember the names. All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Riley.
Okay, good. All right, so we're going to pick it up there with Gino, and I can tell John came in because he came in to say, it's time for you to say it, so say it. All right, I'll say it. Now it's time for Walter's Perspective, sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com.
Chair, and I'm wondering how I get down the stairs.
WSGN Radio. I'm Riley James. Well, clearly that's not the 45 edition, but it's the first one I came across, and I know that Linda in Richland Park wanted to hear Steeler's Wheel Stuck in the Middle with You. All right, so happy to do that. Gino has been waiting a long time to talk about insurance. So, Gino, what about insurance? Welcome to WGN.
Hi there. You know, your show last night motivated me to pull out my car insurance policy.
And? For underinsured.
Yeah. First of all, everything you said about underinsured motorists is true. Yeah. And most people don't know that. And even you wouldn't have known that if not for an incident that you were involved in. The average consumer is very ignorant about insurance. And I don't mean ignorant in a derisive way. Are you there?
Absolutely, I'm here. And you're right. There's not much of a knowledge base. And when you hear the commercials, it's mostly about price. We're going to save you money. And I always say that price is what you pay, but value is what you get. And
exactly.
You know, there's very little value in these cheapo policies. And yeah, I've been screaming about underinsured motorists for 25 years now.
Many people know this and many people don't. Uninsured motorist coverage does not cover your car. It only covers you, the person. Mm-hmm. Bodily injury only. So if I'm driving my car and I get hit by an uninsured motorist, my insurance company will pay for my medical bills, et cetera, but it won't give me anything for the car.
And by the way, that's specific to certain states. Remember, insurance is not a 50-state proposition. So the rules are different depending on where you are. Your state insurance commissioner is setting that.
Yeah, yes, but in this case, I think that's generally true.
Yeah, it's largely true, but it is largely true, but not exclusively. That's why I want to say, if you're listening somewhere else, for God's sakes, check with your state before you decide. But yes.
And check.
Go ahead.
And check with your agent. Everybody should have a good insurance agent.
Agreed.
Not everyone does.
Oh, yeah, most people are happy with the 800 number because, after all, the lizard in the commercial saved you money. Of course, to me, I interview insurance agents. I put them through the ringer on this. So you betcha. But yes, underinsured is just crucial.
And one thing, though, that you said that isn't true on my policy is underinsured motorists is not expensive at all.
How much coverage do you have?
I have $250,000 per person.
I have $2 million.
Okay.
See, it depends. Depends what your limits are. Now, of course, you put an umbrella for liability, but that won't necessarily increase that.
Yeah. My liability premium is roughly $500 a year, but my uninsured motorist is just $31 a year, and underinsured motorist at $250,000 is $36 a year.
That's great. Well, not me. I'll tell you, I'm a few hundred bucks on that underinsured.
Wisconsin is always among the lowest priced states for car insurance.
That's really nice. And so that's another reason, depending on where you are, check that coverage, because for $30-$40 a year, that's something you should not be without.
Now, here's something interesting that if I weren't in the insurance business, I wouldn't know. If you have uninsured motorist coverage and your car is parked in the garage and you're just walking down the street and you get hit by an uninsured motorist, are your injuries covered?
They should be.
You're right.
Yeah, of course.
Most people don't know that.
Oh, no, they should be. Yeah.
You don't have to be in your car.
No.
You can be a pedestrian.
Right, but they have to be in their car. That's the key. If they run into you on their bicycle, this isn't going to count. They've got to be in their car. Yes, that's true.
Exactly. And, you know, what you said that you wish that the mandatory liability
limits
were a lot higher?
Yes.
Do you know who agrees with you on that?
Who?
every personal injury attorney
yes,
in America.
Yes, you're 100% right about that. That's absolutely true. And it should be. It's crazy because the idea that there's mandatory insurance, when you have limits under $50,000, you don't have mandatory insurance, period. I'm so glad you called. You've ended the hour, Gino, and thank you for waiting and call me again soon.
Okay,
okay, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, so another hour with Nick, with Fran, with Dennis, and you on WGN Radio. I'm Riley James, and yeah, that's Chicago's own Peter Brown. Yeah, turned 70 this week. Hard to believe. There's a young guy playing in his bedroom, basically, his own recording studio at home. He did Do You Want to Get Funky With Me. He sent to TK as a demo, and he said, we want to release it. He said, hey, I want to make it a little better than that. And he did, and of course, it became the first million-selling 12-inch. Yeah, as far as disco history. So there. And that album was really nice. Dance With Me came out next. In fact, there's a little appearance by Betty Wright in that. And it's just a fine, fine record. And then he did several other things. And then tinnitus, he said, you know, hey, like to preserve what hearing I got left, and fell back to commercial art, which he was terrific at. If you look at the album cover of Do You Want to Get Funky, the album that has that on that, it looks like there's a nude silhouette in the window. He, of course, did that. It's a cardboard cutout, and it sure is lifelike. So happy 70th to Peter Brown. All right, so now we're back. I don't know what was going on, by the way. I'm just not even going to think about it. And we're going to get to Nick in Baltimore, probably spend the better part of the hour talking about KXYZ. I can't wait for it. But a couple things more about guilt, because we had, as I say, I got an email from one of our regulars, not to be mentioned, who is dealing with a problem where her parents are overbearing to the standpoint that they're abusive. And she's saying, you know, I wish I could make this work, but if I have to cut ties, I'm really in a situation where they're getting older, and I don't want to feel guilty. And you know, that's a tough one, and I think you just have to rationally look at the situation and see if there's any reason for your guilt. If there is, in fact, then follow through. But if it's just somebody trying to put it on you, or worse yet, trying to abuse you in the name of assuaging your guilt, don't go there. That's my advice. But as I was saying earlier, that's insufficient. You guys can do better than that. And Fran said, "Oh, I can tell you about guilt." All right, Fran, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
How's it going?
Yes, this is something I unfortunately know a lot about. I loved my mother dearly, but she and my grandmother both were the mistresses or queens of guilt tripping. They know just what buttons to push, just what to give and what to take away. If nothing else would work, they would make me feel, try to make me feel like, well, you can't handle this on your own. Or you can't do this without me. You know, and I was very happy to prove many times that, yes, I could. But I had to kind of sneak through the back and kind of say, okay, well, no, that's already done, Mom. No, I got that, you know, which sometimes would cause some problems. I mean, she'd act happy about it. But what I guess the thing, I'm still dealing with it, and my mom's been dead for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I am still dealing with the guilt trips. I still deal with her voice in my head telling me I shouldn't be doing this or I should be doing that or, you know, and I guess, I mean, now I'm able to, you know, because she's not here. And that is my answer to her at this point. You know, when she comes in my head and starts saying these things, yeah, but you're not here and I'm doing it my way.
Yeah.
And I did that when she was here. It was just a lot of times she didn't know about it.
Right.
But I guess the thing that I want to say is, if this really sounds like a lot of abuse, I don't know exactly what's going on, but it seems like, you know, a lot of giving things and taking things away and playing little games. Don't worry about the fact that your parents are getting older. We all get older. We're all going to die. And that's nobody's fault. It's just the cycle of life. It's the way it is. The thing that I regret most is that a lot of stuff I just let go. I did not set the boundaries that I should have set.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, I don't want to say that because I don't want to upset Mom because she's got a heart condition.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I don't want to say this because I don't want to upset Mom because she's in pain. And there are things that I should have said, things that we should have resolved. And now she's gone, they will never be resolved. And they will never be said.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There are some things that will never be understood. And that's okay. But I would just say, as far as worrying about, well, I don't want to upset them because they're getting older and, you know, they're not going to be around forever and so forth. Uh-uh. Don't do that.
Yeah. I agree.
You know, that's what I guess that's one of, without going into a whole lot of detail, that's one of my biggest regrets.
Is what you didn't say.
Is what I didn't say, and I was not able to see my mother before she died because she didn't think that I could handle caring for her.
Right.
Which hurt, you know, after all the years. I thought she was the one in the family who believed I could do things. For those who don't know, I'm totally blind, and blind from birth, and I'm an only child. You know, so there's a lot of stuff there that should have been dealt with that wasn't, that I'm still trying to deal with to this day. And I think it would have been a lot easier if we would have had some of the hard conversations, if I would have taken the chance of getting her mad at me, if that was what had to happen.
Yeah, I think your voice should be heard, but as you're saying that, you also can't unsay things, so it's really important when you're in the situation that you come at it from a rational, calm position. If you come at it from an emotional position, you'll regret what you did say, so you have to pull yourself out of it before you start to talk.
Yeah, and that's the hard thing.
Yes.
That is the hardest thing, because you know, like I would sit here and I would tell Gary, well, I'm going to talk to Mom and, you know, I'm going to tell her this and this and this.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, my arguments would be very succinct and, you know, everything. I would talk to her and I would just
lose it.
Yeah, I would just totally lose it. I couldn't.
It's very, very tough. And that's really the key because, you know, when somebody especially is trying to emotionally manipulate you, it is vital that you remain totally rational and calm, because if you become emotional yourself, you've lost, period. game over.
Yeah, but I'm learning now. And,
oh, yeah.
There are a lot of times where I'm saying, okay, well, if I had this to do over again, would I do it differently? No, probably not. You know, what is in it for this person to try to make me feel bad about this?
Right.
You know, just various things like that. And, you know, do you feel that you did all you could in this situation or should have done?
Right.
And if I honestly feel that I have done everything I could, and they're still not happy about it, that is not my problem.
Absolutely right. And I, like I was saying at the start, that to me is the key to guilt, is ask yourself, is it rational that I should do what they are expecting me to do? And if the answer is no, if it is abusive, then there's no reason to feel guilty because it's not you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I really love that advice. And, you know, I've been kind of trying to do that. Yeah. And it's a work in progress. I'm a lot better.
Good.
People can't put the same trips on me that they, you know, used to.
Excellent.
I've lost some friends over it.
Well, then they weren't friends.
No.
They revealed themselves, and you exited stage left, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. I know one thing. If something like that happens, you find out who your real friends are.
Oh, absolutely.
And I found out that a lot of people who I thought were my real friends were not. And that was hard, and it still is. But I also try to think, hey, you know, I do have people who do care about me, and, you know.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I always say at the worst times, you find out who your friends are. You find out you actually have more than you thought, but they're not the ones you thought they were. So very often the very people...
That is very interesting. Yeah,
that's
true.
You find out, gee, I do have friends. They're just not who I thought they were, but they're there.
Right.
You betcha.
Yeah, a lot of times they're people that are kind of in the background
of your life. You don't even think about it. And they're the people who come through and just save you. And it's, you know, it's like, thank you, Jesus. It's not who I thought it would be, but I'll take what I get. Yeah.
But the thing that I would most definitely advise is to deal with these boundaries.
Yes.
Before you can't anymore.
Well, and deal with these boundaries before you go out and react, because that's the key. Don't react, act. And you can't act unless you know your boundaries well. If you don't, you are only reacting.
Exactly. And, you know, it's hard because, you know, because I got used to that, I let other people, you know, I was in abusive relationships, and, you know, unconditional love is out there. It's hard to find, but it is out there.
Yeah.
And you probably have people that feel that way now. I'm talking to, you don't need to put up with this, that.
Absolutely right.
Supporting this person financially?
No, I don't think so, but they are giving lavish gifts and then taking it away. And that's why I said refuse the gifts.
Yeah.
You know, things like a car, you know. Well, we'll give you a car. Well, we want that car.
No.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, and that's hard because you really want that stuff.
Well, that's right, but you can't. You just you give them that, and
the price is too high.
Yes.
One of the things I ask a lot of times with my mom is, how high is the price?
Exactly.
If I let her do this.
Right, you're 100% right.
How high is the price?
Yeah, because you're shopping in the mall of life, and rarely is the price just financial. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Thank you, Fran. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay. Talk to you soon. All right, so, and Fran sounding healthy and whole, and that's best news of all. So, 888-876-5593, you're going to get to Nick here in a moment, but I've got Dennis in Colorado who's been hanging on forever. So, Dennis, what's up?
Hello, Raleigh.
How are you?
You know, seconds after John put me on hold to wait for your call, a mama bear and two little cubs, cute as heck, came up on the porch and started nosing around.
So that's wonderful.
I was torn between watching them. Yeah. They show up somewhat often.
Good.
I throw scraps off the porch for the foxes and the coyotes. Uh-huh. I don't know who gets them, but whatever they don't eat goes off the porch. I mean, 22-pound chicken, the turkey, that's a little freezer burned off the porch. Next morning, there's no sign of it.
Right.
But it happened to catch the bears, and there's Aww. Residual bird seed out there and stuff. So these two little cubs, about 18 inches long, and out there mosing around with mommy. The cub was actually climbing along the railing of the porch.
Good.
Which was really
Oh, nice. I love bears. I just do.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there about 5 feet from him through an open screen door watching this.
Oh, yeah.
And Mama Bear knows me, and she looks up at me every once in a while just to check, make sure I'm not getting too close, but she doesn't care. Anyway, on the subject at hand, I know we're coming up against the break here, but there's one thing that has to happen. Well, I say has to happen. This has worked for me in three familial incidents I've been involved with, not my family, but people I was very close to. And somehow I came up with this 40 years ago.
All right.
I told a child of a family, I said, you have to reverse roles. You have to become the parent, and you have to raise your parents.
Yes.
Like their kids. And in three particular incidents, in the other incident, the second one, I was close to the dad, the father, and he was going through writhing pains and everything because his daughter was becoming her own real person. And he was just flying off the walls. He wanted her to still be the little girl that she always was.
Right.
In the first case, he was a late teens, brilliant kid, really, he was going to set the world on fire, and he ended up doing that. But a mom was just guilting him into all kinds of crazy stuff. Well, what will your uncle think? He wouldn't approve. His uncle happened to be a famous man. Well, your dad wouldn't like that. Well, how would that look to, you know, just what will the neighbors think? And it was really unreasonable stuff. So I told him, I said, you need to raise her and bring her on board. So he started doing that. And just calmly, when the static started, calmly say, you know, behave as though, you know, you're a loving family. But then when the boundaries start getting violated, behave like the adult and excuse yourself. Now, just like a kid who has a tantrum after mom or dad tells them something they don't want to hear, these folks are going to do that too.
Oh,
in
yes.
An adult way.
Yes.
And you have to ride that out. Now, people pleasing personalities hate doing that. People pleasers hate to do this. It's tough. I'm reminded of a call you got maybe 2 years ago. There was this young lady called in, and she was in tears, and she had a long-term boyfriend who was abusing himself. He was on drugs. He was having criminal problems. And I'm screaming at the radio, leave this. Oh, get out of this circumstance. And she wanted to stay with him, and he was destroying his own life, and she wanted to save him.
Right.
You know, so the impulse to please can be very powerful. But reverse the roles, become the parent, and calmly set the limits. It might sound simple, but that in three cases I've been associated with where these were people that were close to me, it worked.
Yes.
It changed because the parents, in this case, in her case, in your friend's case, figured out, every time I do this, this happens, and I'm gone.
Right.
You know, And you're right. You're so right on when you said when you become emotional, you've lost. You started arguing and fighting, and you've lost. So it has to be very dispassionate. So it takes a lot of discipline to do it.
Yeah, but that's all great. That's great advice.
I think it works most of the time.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't. Fortunately, I've never had to do that with any of my immediate family. But it happens, and it happens a lot.
Well, and the best part is that in the event it doesn't work, if you've tried this repeatedly, there's no reason for guilt because you've given it your all.
That's right. You've given it your best shot. Plus, you can count on the many years you did have. Were they good years? Remind mom and dad, in this case, if she's having this problem.
Yeah.
You know, move the situation, turn back the clock, do some waxing nostalgic, and keep it on that. But as soon as they turn on the guilt,
yep.
Mom, I got to go.
Absolutely. Great advice. Dennis, thank you.
You're welcome.
Talk to you soon.
All right.
All right. We'll pick it up with Nick and then Rita and Marlo, but going to talk KXYZ coming up next here on WGN. WGN Radio. I'm Riley James, and yep, that is Betty Wright in the background. Dance with me, Peter Brown. Great, great stuff. All right, so the moment I've been waiting for. I have, too, because I love talking radio with Nick in Baltimore, and I believe we're going to talk Houston radio at the moment. So, all right, Nick, thanks for waiting.
Hey, good morning, Wally.
What's happening?
Oh, nothing much. I just had a question. I don't know if I've ever asked you this before, but I had a question about KXYZ and what kind of radio station it was. From what I hear, they had air checks of it. They were easy listening, but were they top 40 at one point?
Yeah, they were for a while. It's been a lot of things. It started out in the basement of the Texas State Hotel in the barber shop. And like all these early stations, it was, you know, a cluster in terms of who owned it. It was actually a guy named Tilford Jones, and he was the cousin of the guy who owned KTRH and other stations. But anyway, Lester Kamen bought it from some Harris County broadcasters, whoever they were. And in 1961, he signed the FM on at 96.5. Now, in 1968, he sold it to ABC, the combo. And he got a lot of money for this because he got like 20,000 shares of ABC stock, and I think it was like 57.5 at the time on the stock. So he got like 1.175 million for it. And, of course, under ABC, they took KXYZ FM and turned it into KAUM. And but yes, absolutely, KXYZ under ABC was top 40 for a minute there. I'll tell you, Johnny Goin could tell you the truth. I think he was on it, but yeah, they were.
Oh, okay. I always wondered about that because I was looking it up on the internet and I saw there was like a playlist. But then it did some weird easy listening thing, too.
Well, they did a lot of things as far as that goes. But I know, and I believe when I
with
did
reverb.
The, right, yes. Well, who didn't? I believe that when I did the Mediatrix profile, I actually included one of the KXYZ top 40 surveys in that.
Oh, okay.
You know, that was the 80s, 87 or something. I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure that I put one of the one of them, and you know, I'd have to go back and look. I think more people who read them know more about them than I do who wrote it. But nonetheless, let's see. What am I saying? Kilt and K News weren't alone in top 40. In 57, KXYZ tried it. So this is the Lester Kamen days, evidenced by this 1957 playlist. 22 years later, they tried it again, and I have a 1979 playlist. It was more disco then. But yeah, I've got 57 in here and 79. So yeah, it's so long ago I don't remember doing this, but I know I did, obviously. So yeah, I'm looking at the supersonic survey for the week of October 14th, 1957, and Chuck Dunaway and Larry Kane were there. Yeah, the new KXYZ on your dial, the station that found the sound. Love that. And yes, the radioactive record was Story of My Life by Marty Robbins on Columbia. The Atomic Bomb was Exotica by Martin Denny on Liberty. Number one record was Jailhouse Rock. So that was 57. And then they did it again in 79, whether we wanted them to or not. And so, yes, so that was the deal there, and I've got both of them. So yes, they absolutely did.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. I mean, Houston was a wild market then.
It was a great market. It really was a truly great market, and you know, like I say, Johnny could tell you more about it. But Kilt and K News, you betcha, they both were good radio stations.
Oh, yeah, the McClendon station.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right, as in the Scotsman Kilt, yes, yes.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Those were the days.
Yeah, well, sure, and there's an awful lot of Houston radio history, that's for sure.
All these towns were good, though, even here.
Yeah. Well, but
like you said the last time I called, you know, places in time.
Oh, that's absolutely true.
And if you could only go back to places in time, you know.
But you know what's interesting about this? Just like in Baltimore, when we talk so much about how we like WITH, a lot of the stations that we really loved had no signals to speak of. Like KNUZ had a lousy signal, and then you know when Keener came on as 1070 Keener, when that came on, that was a daytimer, you know, as was Kick. So you had a lot of things that were just absolute dog signal-wise, but in spite of it, were still great radio stations.
Well, I was telling Mike Lance, who calls, you know, I'm friends with Mike Lance down in Miami, and I was telling him the same very same thing that a lot of these stations. I don't mean to take your time. I'm going to be real quick with this, but a lot of these stations were the stations that took a chance on rock and roll, and you talk about the R&B stations. You know, they didn't have a signal. They were the low-powered stations, and you know, nobody had general managers that didn't want to do. They hated rock and roll, and it took a long time for the bigger stations to, you know, jump on board.
The reason they hated rock and roll had very little to do with the sound, and all to do with they couldn't sell it. And this was a huge problem. You know, you'd have sponsorship like the local department store, and the local department store wouldn't buy it. So, you know, the sales guys would go out and, talking especially in the 50s, they'd come back and they'd not be making sales. So when Mitch Miller at the first annual disc jockey convention in Kansas City in 1958 proclaimed rock and roll was dead, managers rejoiced. In fact, Kay Smith Broadcasting went back and changed the format of KJR. They were so thrilled. Not that they didn't like rock and roll, but they could not sell it. So, you know, interestingly, when we talk about stations that take a chance, we're using that loosely because there was nothing to lose. You know, when they talk about, say, Gordon McLennan was a visionary. Well, no, he had nothing to lose. You know, these stations, particularly in Dallas, Cliff and Oak Cliff, wasn't worth more than a plug nickel. So what you saw and what was so interesting, human nature being what it is, all the network stations that had network revenue, they didn't go anywhere near top 40 because they had something to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just these upstarts that, you know, why not? And that's exactly what it was. But they certainly weren't taking a chance because there was nothing they were risking.
Well, like over here, you were talking about WITH and even WWIN. They had no network.
Right. Well, that was it. That was it. There were the independent stations. Right. And the network stations, literally, it was the 60s before the network stations really let go of that. And, you know, when ABC changed one at a time, they still kept, you know, like the Don McNeil Breakfast Club in the mornings. Right. You know, there were things they were not giving up. So, sure.
They delayed it, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, different things in different markets. But the bottom line is they weren't. And, of course, ABC had a worse problem on the West Coast because they had absorbed the Don Lee network earlier. So they had ABC and ABC West. They were carrying all those features, which is why they wound up going talk there. They weren't visionaries of talk either. They just had no room to play records. So, sure.
Yeah, that's another interesting story.
Yeah.
West Coast.
That was it. If you had that much network commitment, you know, the hell with more music. It was any music. And the answer was, no, not really. So it's exactly what they did. So there again, they weren't visionaries about all talk. They just really had no choice.
Right. And if you had nothing to lose, you took a chance on rock and roll,
see,
even R&B.
Exactly. And that's...
You know, that's, you know...
You know, that's where we kind of hope that radio goes back to nothing to lose, because that's when you see innovation.
Right. Yeah, I think it'll happen, too, by the way.
Oh, I do, too, and in one way or another. And, again, we're busy talking about the delivery truck rather than what's on it, but absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, let me get out of here so you can get the other callers.
Thank you for
here,
calling, and thank you for waiting. It's always a delight to hear from you, Nick.
Sam, I really appreciate it. Thanks,
all right, talk to you soon. So we'll pick it up right there with Marlo and Rita and you on WGN Radio. Oh, WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. So we'll forego the bumper for a variety of reasons, too numerous to mention, and talk to Rita in Harwood Heights. How's it going, Rita?
Hi, Raleigh. I got in on just a small part of yesterday's program, last night's program, because I was out. And I had stopped my insurance for my car and the house have been under the same people for 52 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never gotten a discount, but they it's very expensive. So I went recently, I just went and dropped over to one of their competitors and asked what their prices would be. And because of my age, I'm at high risk because, you know, if you'd think that they would lower the price if you get older, but they don't. They increase it.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say that you really need to shop because some insurance companies do not really surcharge you for that, and others surcharge you out the yin-yang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they told me, this competitor had, she went over everything about my history and everything with the cars. And I have a charcoal color car. For some reason, people keep hitting it. And I had several hit and runs. And I don't have a smartphone. I just have my little flip emergency phone.
Mm-hmm.
And but they told me that the price of the insurances across the board, apparently, are going up 25% when you go to pay your next bill. And that you must have a smartphone.
Well, that's that company. That's not true for every company. They're lying to you. They're absolutely lying to you. There is no across the board you have to have a smartphone. Just I would not talk to that person again because that person is lying to you. Their company may require it, but most will not.
Okay.
So don't necessarily believe what you're being told. Shop many of them because some of them really surcharge if you're over 75. Others do not. And so usually for most of them, that's the magic number, 75, though it varies. And it's not always the same. Like many years ago, one of the worst offenders of this was State Farm and one of the best as far as giving you, age without surcharge was Allstate. Well, it's not that case anymore. So what you heard 25, 35, 45 years ago isn't valid today. Shop them all and make sure you're shopping apples to apples. In other words, you know what kind of coverage you want. And don't forget underinsured.
Yeah, I have full coverage.
Right. Well, you say full coverage, you have to specify what that means because it doesn't mean the same thing to everybody is what I'm saying.
Right.
You want to see all the lines, particularly as I was saying last night, underinsured. But you want to see what it all is and then compare the prices across the board that way. And you're going to find a couple that will not surcharge you. Now, it takes a while. But if anybody gives you nonsense like you have to have a smartphone, hang up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, my brother in Kansas told me, too. He says, you know, you're high risk.
Well, you are.
I said, well, why?
You are.
I'm getting older. That makes me high risk.
No.
He said, because you are living in the Chicago area and all of the carjackings.
Well,
and they always,
right, that's
they always
true, too.
Use those cars for crime, or they smash them up.
Well, no.
Somebody's got to pay the bill.
Well, no, it's true that your zip code is a big part of this. And, you know, when you say you're in Chicago, it depends where, because it varies zip code by zip code. And, yes, some zip codes are going to be redlined, as they call it in the industry, where you get just ridiculous rates. You're not going to move, so we can't have you do that. But call them all and find out what your rates are and let me know.
Yeah, because my insurance is going to be due in September.
Well, you got plenty of time. You got plenty of time. Call now.
Yeah, well, that's what I've been doing.
Yeah.
Isn't there... I'm getting older, and it's just getting harder and harder to keep up with everything. And isn't there a song about something about the way it used to be or the life I used to have or whatever?
Someday
some kind of a song
the world,
like
the world I used to know?
Yeah.
There's a number of them. But by the way, the reason there's a surcharge when you're over 75 is the accident rates do increase. I hate to say it, but they do. So that's actuarially valid. So unfortunately. But you'll find a company that won't penalize you as much. And let me know what it is. I'll be curious.
Okay. Then there's also, apply for this plan that they have where they put a little device on.
Yes, I wouldn't do that for anything in the world. They're gonna check to see how well you drive and rate you accordingly. Well, if you like Big Brother in the other seat, you do it. No money in the world would be worth it to me for that. But that's okay. Just me. Anyway, you've ended the night. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you, Raleigh.
All right. And apologies to Marlo. We wanted to talk about guilt and behavior. So, Marlo, call me back Tuesday night. I do want to talk about that, and I'm sorry we ran out of time. Now, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air. Above all, I thank you for calling. I thank John for screening your calls. And that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. Talk to you live Monday night for Monday Night Trivia. Tomorrow night's a replay right here on WGN Radio.